Guess what, guys? It's time to embrace the horror. Look, we got front row tickets to the end of the earth.
Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to the bunker, everybody, on this very good Friday.
It is. It is April the 14th of 2006, and this is a weekend that we honor our Lord and Savior with what we call Resurrection Sunday. Most of the world refers to it as Easter. We don't get dogmatic about it. It's just something that we've come to believe over the last few years as we look at the history behind the day that's called Easter Sunday now. And the fact that the name, the very name, derives from the Babylonian goddess Ishtar, who in turn was just another incarnation of the ancient Sumerian Semiramis, wife of Nimrod.
Yep. You know what? I think we're going to see an awful lot of that goddess worship as we head toward the last days.
I agree. And we see it even in the Roman Catholic Church. There is a movement. Not everyone believes this. Many don't. But there is a movement within the rank and file of the Roman Catholic Church to petition the Pope to elevate Mary to the status of co-redemptrix with Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry, but that's just not right, because she needed salvation as well.
Yeah. Peter made it very clear there's no other name under heaven on which we can call for salvation.
That's right.
So, that is incorrect.
That is indeed. Well, you know what? We got lots going on in Watcher Magazine. We're going to address the news. We may or may not go full length today. We've got Nicole over here this weekend. In fact, she's going to join us a little later on. She and Derek are going to have a discussion about some shows that are on television right now. Mm-hmm. And sit back, relax. If we don't go a full 30 or 40 or 50 or whatever we normally do, you know, watch us go an hour now, because I've said that.
Yeah, we normally aim for 30 and wind up at 45. So, this past week, actually the last couple of weeks, we have been hearing a lot in the news about the Gospel of Judas, and we touched on it just a bit this week, not a whole lot. We confirmed yesterday an interview with one of the scholars who was involved in the team assembled by National Geographic Society to analyze the Gospel of Judas, Craig Evans. We're going to speak with him tomorrow, and we are going to rearrange the schedule that we'd kind of tentatively set for next week, and we'll present the interview with Craig Evans next week. He is a professor of New Testament studies at Arcadia University in Nova Scotia, and has written and edited 50 books dealing with the historicity of Jesus, Bible and archaeology, and a number of other topics that make him very well qualified to discuss this issue. And we'll find out from someone who was on the inside exactly what the Gospel of Judas means to the world at large and to Christianity in particular.
That's right. You know, in fact, he was originally recommended to us by Mike Heiser.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that he is a good guy.
Yeah.
Knows his stuff, because Mike would not recommend anybody whose ability to translate ancient texts was any less proficient than
right. And the way Mike put it was that Craig Evans is somebody that we could trust to inject some sanity into a topic that has brought forth from the media, what did Mike call it, a disturbing inability to think critically, something like that.
It's a feeding frenzy.
Yeah.
It is just the most insane thing. But you know what? The gospel says that in the last days, people will heap unto themselves teachers having itching ears. They want people to tell them something that makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that maybe the gospel as we know it, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, isn't quite reliable, well, that makes a lot of people feel really good.
Mm-hmm. It does. Now, something that really surprised us, and you noticed this last weekend in particular, the folks that host the morning news magazine on Fox last Sunday, spent a lot of time talking about the Gospel of Judas.
It was all over the place, and there were two of them, and I wish I could remember their names.
Kelly Wright.
Kelly Wright was one, and then the other African-American host of
Julian.
Yeah, I know, it's Julian. Julian Cuddy? No.
No,
Juliet Cuddy.
Right.
It's Julian, and I'm so sorry. We'll look it up, and I'll have it a little later for you. But both of them came out during this sort of Gnostic discussion of Judas and said, look, hold it. We as Christians, we can't get all bent out of shape about this. We have to remember that this is outside the Bible. This is not canon. This is not spiritually breathed. This is ate up, essentially, is what they were saying, but they didn't use that phrase. And at the time, I said to you, I wonder how long they'll have their jobs.
Julian Phillips,
yeah, yes.
Julian Phillips. So, you know, kudos to Julian Phillips and Kelly Wright for speaking out as much as they were able. The thing that really made us wonder, made us curious, raised our hackles, perhaps the tinfoil hats that we wear, heighten our sensitivity to these conspiratorial, conspiratorial waves. We wondered why Fox News was spending so much time on the Gospel of Judas. Mm-hmm. Now, bear in mind, dear listener, that Fox News is the network that many evangelical Christians turn to because you can trust Fox News, not like that evil communist CNN network that communist news.
They're conservative. They're evil.
Yes, Fox News is conservative, and therefore we must listen to. They've got Ollie North on that network. By golly, they must be good. Well, we turned out. We did a little research, and Sharon turned up this interesting little detail: the National Geographic cable channel, which presented the special on the Gospel of Judas last Sunday night, is a joint venture between the National Geographic Society and
News Corp.
News Corp, the parent company of Fox News. In other words,
Rupert Murdoch owns them both.
And he's using Fox News as just one more marketing tool for his other media properties. He made the Gospel of Judas a story in order to hype interest in the Gospel of Judas, in which National Geographic has a lot of money invested. Mm-hmm. Now, dear listener, how does that affect your opinion of Fox News?
Well, it didn't do a whole lot for mine, but you know what? My opinion of Fox News has just deteriorated by the day over the last year. So.
Well, it has. Once we began realizing, oh, wait a minute. Things that we can discern from other news sources out there that appear to be reliable, or at least as reliable as Fox News, are contradicting the story or the spin on the story that we're getting from Fox News. Mm-hmm. So we need to do a little more, use a little more discernment here. And we have determined, at least in some cases, that stories on Fox are being spun for particular to move public opinion in a particular direction.
They have a vested interest, and they should say so. Anytime they mention a book or a television show or a movie that Rupert Murdoch has interest in, they should say it.
They should say so. And they should say so anytime they have anyone from the Weekly Standard on as a Fox News contributor.
Which is owned by News Corp.
Fred Barnes, Bill Kristol, owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Mm-hmm.
These are not independent guys. These are guys who are on the same payroll, which is why they're on Fox News as contributors, quote, end quote. Now, this is just another example of a case in which I'm finding myself really cheesed. And I have to agree with left-wing moonbats on their opinion of Fox News.
We're going to have to paint little bat wings on our
I bats. Know. We're just proving that we are the radical center.
You know, that's just it. You and I, we really don't take either side. We really do try to look at the issue in light of Scripture. That's where you and I differ from everybody else. And I think many of our listeners are in the same uncomfortable position that we are.
Yes, and that's why we find ourselves so few and far between. And, you know, I wouldn't say that we're different from everybody else, but, you know, the mainstream media seems to be pretty well, at least the ones who are prominent in the mainstream media, seem to be pretty well divided. You're either left-wing moonbat or right-wing nut job. You're either Al Franken or Bill O'Reilly, and ne'er the twain shall meet. And that is the dichotomy. That is the paradigm that's laid out for us.
Mm-hmm. Instead of Bill O'Reilly, I think I would use Sean Hannity.
Sean Hannity.
Because a lot of people who are consider themselves conservative don't consider Bill O'Reilly in their camp.
No, that's true. That's very true. Sean
he's
Hannity would be better.
Actually.
Yeah, well, he says he is.
He says he is. I'm not sure. I think he's out for money.
He's a big government libertarian.
Oh, he is.
Which, of course, makes no sense.
I know.
Which is agreeing with what you're saying. He's actually in it for the money.
But don't stop watching Fox.
No.
Because it's research. If they are spinning something day after day after day, ask yourself why.
Mm-hmm.
What does Rupert Murdoch get out of this? What ties are there to Rupert Murdoch that make him, put him in a position where he has to toe the government line?
Right. And interestingly then, when we see Fox and contributors to Fox spinning the story that the Dubai Ports World deal is actually good for America and good for security, when anyone with a lick of common sense can step back and say, now, wait a minute, I'm not anti-Arab, but it's commonly known and it's been documented in mainstream press that an awful lot of contraband, including stuff that explodes and illegal narcotics, are run through the ports at Dubai. And in fact, the Dubai, the guys who run Dubai ports pretty much brag about how easy it is to get stuff in and out of their port, then we need to step back as Americans and say, are these the guys we want responsible for checking container contents when they come into 21, not six. They kept reporting six ports.
I know.
Ports.
They, well, that was 21, intentional.
It was intentional. So we have to
because
ask ourselves.
Because the only ones they gave up were those six.
Right. Even though Dubai Ports World's website had all 21.
Right. Speaking of Dubai, there's another story we need to get here.
Right, and I was kind of segueing into that.
Oh,
so,
you were?
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking on the same wavelength.
He's dancing,
there.
Shuffling.
It's like bees, you know, they do the little dance. I know where the flower is. It's, we do the same thing here with our hands. Here's the next story coming. So you have to ask then, why is Fox and their contributors spinning the story a certain way when anyone with common sense can see that it just ain't so? Well, it's because Fox and its ownership has a vested interest in supporting the policies of the government, the powers that be. Plus, as we found out, one of the major investors in News Corp also happens to be in the royal family of Saudi Arabia. So there may be a little bit of that going on as well. You just have to get your news from a multitude of sources and, of course, believe everything that we say. No, just kidding.
Welcome to the island or the village.
Just take in a multitude of sources and then use discernment, which is what sadly the majority of our brothers and sisters aren't doing. And there's not much that can be done about that.
That's the truth.
Trying to gently prod them with gentleness and respect.
Well, as I said, speaking of Dubai, and you were segueing right into this story. This is a story that we actually mentioned a few weeks back, but now it's in the mainstream press because now George Bush has to make a recommendation whether or not Dubai gets to buy Doncasters, which is a UK company that owns a lot of big corporations that make parts for the military, plants that supply our soldiers.
In fact, Doncasters owns the company that it makes.
They make turbine fan parts for U.S. Abrams battle tanks.
Yeah, and it's the only company that makes those, that particular part. In other words, it's kind of a critical part for one of the main components of our ground forces. So it is something that you would think would be considered somewhat in the interest of national security.
Now, this is far more serious than China making our uniforms. This is a country that has known ties to terrorism, known ties to Al-Qaeda. And they are going to be in charge of a plant that supplies parts to the Abrams tank.
Yeah, you'd think that somebody would want to review that.
Well, you'd think that that would be a big deal. Well, let's just pray that somebody puts the kibosh on it. But apparently, I am sure that when Dubai agreed to give up those few ports that they did give up, that there was a deal made.
That's very possible. And again, as we talked last night, or night before last, there are other pressures being brought to bear. Dubai is in the process of negotiating and deciding on a major aircraft purchase. And the two competing companies are Boeing and Airbus.
Dubai,
and we're talking about a multi-billion dollar aircraft sale. And you better believe that Boeing has got its lobbyists working on the government to make sure that the government doesn't irritate the government of Dubai to the point where they pull their offer to Boeing off the table.
Oh, absolutely. But add to that, if you're going to wage a war in the Persian Gulf, you need to have somebody on that Gulf as a friend.
And Dubai has ports that are very, very close to Iran. I mean, basically where the Persian Gulf narrows, the Straits of Hormuz, is where Dubai juts out into the, if I remember my geography correctly, I believe it's where Dubai and the United Arab Emirates jut out into the sea.
It's like, it's sort of like having friends in Louisville if you're going to invade southern Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, you know, being good friends with the people at Dover if you're going to, you know, attack Normandy. It's just a really close, it's a really close point. And the point is that if Dubai is working with us and something should happen to break out in the Persian Gulf region, it would be good to be able to make use of that territory. And I suspect that we probably will. And so we may well see Dubai taking ownership of this plant, producing the turbine fan parts for our Abrams tanks. As long as we're speaking about what's going on over there in the Gulf, there's a story that's not of major geopolitical import, but I thought it was kind of interesting to bring up anyway. BBC is reporting that a senior officer of the United States Marine Corps is willing to apologize to the government of Iraq, whoever that might be, for damage that's been caused to the ruins of the ancient city of Babylon.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Apparently, our Marine Corps built a helicopter pad on top of the ruins, and that the soldiers who were building fortifications for the troops to protect them filled their sandbags with archaeological material. I mean, they basically went to the dig sites and just scooped up everything that was there and used it to fill sandbags. At least, putting on the tinfoil hat again, that's the story.
That's the story. I was going to say, I cannot imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
That they would be, anybody would be foolish enough to say, let's go make some sandbags out of this archaeological dig.
Mm-hmm.
No,
it's just old broken bits of pottery.
If the stuff's missing, then it's for another reason.
Some little eye idols, nothing to worry about here.
No.
Well, that's the story. Colonel Coleman, who is the officer, he was the chief of staff at Babylon when it was occupied by the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, has told the BBC that he will apologize if the Iraqis want it for the destruction that the U.S. Marine Corps caused in the ancient ruins. Again, just putting on the conspiratorial hat there, just one wonders if there might have been other things removed from the site of ancient Babylon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, speaking of, foreign countries influencing what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
South Korea has been, there's a deal worked out with a South Korean company to hire 10,000 South Korean nurses to work in the United States. Now, this is on top of a deal that we reported some time back about a whole lot of nurses from India coming over here and working in the United States. The problem is that there's a huge nursing shortage. We're short about 300,000 nurses here in the U.S.
I did not know that.
Well, I knew that we had a shortage, but I hadn't realized it was that drastic. You look at any newspaper in the one ads. By the way, that's Murphy. He's just chased Java back out the back door, so they'll be fine for a minute. If you look into any one ad section, jobs section in your newspaper, you're going to see all kinds of bonuses offered for nurses if they'll just hire on. Very often, these hospitals will go to the nursing school, and they'll recruit, and they will offer very competitive bonuses. Come on, just say you're going to work with us, because they really, really need nurses.
Hmm.
And If you're an RN, especially, more and more women and men who go into nursing, frankly, if you can just put in 1 year, you can get your LPN, licensed practical nurse. But if you have to put in 2 years or more to get your RN in most cases. So many people, especially those who are going later in life, maybe getting a second or third career, they tend to go for the 1 year and they're out the door. And it's huge demand. So here we are hiring people from overseas. And I'm not so sure I like that idea. It's not a prejudice thing. There are lots and lots of women, mm-hmm. especially, but men can also be nurses. But women out there who would probably do this if they had a better deal to get them through school and maybe even forgiveness for loans.
Mm-hmm.
If the government just advertised and said, we're offering an amnesty for any school loans. We're offering this incentive or that incentive for you to just join up. This is a way you can serve your country by becoming a nurse and working in a hospital.
And, you know, nurses don't get wealthy, but they make a good wage. And especially if there is a shortage, again, you'd think that there would be a competitive pay scale for people willing to become nurses.
Actually, so the pay isn't too bad. Now, I do think they need to increase it a little bit, but it's much better than it was 10 years ago.
So the question then is, why are we going offshore when we've got people here in the United States who may have been downsized from other occupations as this society has become less manufacturing-oriented and more service-oriented? I mean, you'd think if you had a choice of working, say, 35 hours a week at a McDonald's or putting in a year or two at school and becoming a nurse, mm-hmm. you'd become a nurse.
I know. My other question is, how well do they speak and read English?
Well, that's a really good question.
I mean, if I go into a hospital, to be honest with you, I do want my nurse to be able to understand what I say to him or her. And I also want to know that whatever they chart is legible.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, a lot of doctors chart things that aren't legible at all.
Yeah.
And I know, frankly, I've worked in the health field before, and I know things I charted probably weren't legible because my handwriting really stinks. But simply because their English skills may not be that great.
Well, that may be a concern. I will say that I work with a fair number of Korean people, and that many of them learn English as a second language and learn it very well. One would hope that in the process of recruiting that would be something they would consider. But
well,
again, I think the bottom line is if we've got people here in the United States who are concerned about the way the economy's gone over the last 10 years or so, and you know, ignore the Dow Jones industrial number. I mean, it doesn't matter where that number's at. The fact is that you know, we can step back and just say, okay, look, the value of our home, or at least the dollar value, has doubled since mm-hmm. I moved in here 13 years ago. But I'll guarantee you that my paycheck has not doubled in the last 13 years.
No, and that sounds good for us. But if we were buying this home right now mm-hmm. for the first time,
right,
I wouldn't want to pay twice what you paid for this house.
No, and again, my income has definitely not doubled over the last 12, 13 years. So it's the government figures that tell us that inflation is in check and inflation's under control. Whoever's calculating those numbers is not looking at the cost of housing and is not looking at the cost of health care.
Yeah.
In this country over the last 10 years. So.
And, you know, they say the housing bubble is bursting. Well, it is not bursting right here. I'll tell you what. In our neighborhood alone, over houses, the same type of house mm-hmm. that was for sale last fall is now $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 more than it was last fall. The very
yeah.
same house. Because some of the houses are the same houses that were sale,
right.
were on the market last fall. Well, you know, I ranted about that long enough, I guess.
And now turning to matters of a more ethereal nature, I wanted to bring up something that just crossed my computer screen here. It's a release from Dr. Michael Sala of the Exopolitics Institute. We don't talk about him much because his analysis of the extraterrestrial UFO phenomenon mm-hmm. is quite a bit different than ours. He believes that the government should open diplomatic channels to the visitors who are on planet right now. We know that those visitors have been here all along.
And more than likely, diplomatic channels have been open for a long time.
Right, right.
Actually, they're more in the term of religious channels would be my guess.
Yes. Well, he has put out a press release and announced that a former French military air traffic controller by the name of Eric Julien has completed a study of the comet 73P Schwachmann-Wachmann and has declared that a fragment is highly likely to impact the Earth on or around May 25th of 2006.
Hmm.
Now, I'm going to read here, and this is the first I'm seeing of this, so I don't know how accurate or reliable this is. This is something, this will be your homework for the weekend, listeners, as well as ours, to do some research on this and see how seriously credentialed astrophysicists are taking this guy. Comet Schwachmann-Wachmann follows a five-year orbit that crosses the solar system's ecliptic plane. It has followed its five-year orbit intact for centuries, but in 1995 mysteriously fragmented. According to Julien, this is the same year that a crop circle appeared showing the inner solar system with the Earth missing from its orbit. Okay, I think we see where this is going.
Uh-huh.
According to, he argues that the missing Earth crop circle was a message from higher intelligences warning humanity of the consequences of its destructive nuclear policies.
Mm-hmm.
He links this crop circle to May 25th, 2006, and identifies the comet Schwachmann-Wachmann as the subject of higher intelligence communications. Using NASA simulations of the comet's path, Julien concludes that impact is likely around May 25th, precisely when the comet crosses the Earth's ecliptic plane. While the first fragment will cross at approximately 10 million miles, lagging fragments threaten to collide. While astronomers have stated that the comet poses no direct threat, Julien argues that some fragments are too small to observe. Astronomers have predicted possible meteor showers, indicating some cometary debris will enter the atmosphere. Julien argues that the kinetic energy of even a car-sized fragment will impact the Earth with devastating effect. He concludes that the May 25th event is tied to the Bush administration's policy of preemptive use of nuclear weapons against Iran, and that the effect of nuclear weapons on the realms on the realms of higher intelligences. Okay, so this guy's basically turning this into a political rant.
What?
Yeah. Well, we'll put a link to this this PR release, and you can do some research on it. But I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Have no idea whether this Eric Julien knows what he's talking about or not, or if he's just using this to try to raise a point about whether or not the U.S. should go to war with Iran.
Well, according to spaceweather.com, Schwashman, how the heck is that pronounced?
73P.
There you go. 73P is on its way, and it will be here in May.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's going to happen with it, I can't tell from reading, scanning here really quickly down the page. I don't see a definitive article about it, but...
Yeah. Well, according to the press release here, Julien predicts that the comet collision will occur in the Atlantic Ocean between the equator and the Tropic of Cancer and generate 200-meter, that's roughly 660 feet, 200-meter waves.
We'll come in again.
Yeah. So, 525 of 06.
Well, homework for the weekend, folks.
Yeah, let's research this and see what we can come up with for Monday.
Well, you know what we have right now? When Nicole was on before, we got email requesting more Nicole. We want more Nicole. Well, guess what, guys and gals? She's here tonight. So without further ado, I'm going to leave the microphone. I know. I know you're all shedding a tear. But Nicole is going to, she's going to come in and you're hardly going to miss me. So here we go. Nicole is going to share her views on what's going on in the world.
Hi, Nicole.
Hey, Dad.
You look lovely wrapped up in that plaid blanket there. Is the air conditioning that chilly down here?
Yeah. It is the basement, though.
Well, that's the bunker. It's, below ground for maximum protection against stuff. It's, to keep Sharon from overheating. Mm-hmm. So, we appreciate you adapting to the cooler temperatures over here. Just curious, do you guys at school this week talk at all about the Gospel of Judas?
And stuff?
Not at all, huh?
Nope.
Okay. No. So matters of theological issues don't really come to, come into the conversation at all?
Generally not. The teachers are so self-conscious about, not self-conscious, but they're so conscious of saying anything that it's kind of left to the students to talk about, So teachers never bring it up unless it's amongst themselves and kids.
Not exactly number one conversation.
Not really. No. I don't remember what the biggest news story I talked about this week was.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I can't remember ever talking about God when I was in school either. So,
well, it's not like
we don't.
I guess
I'm not that surprised.
I mean, it's not like we don't, but, it's... It was just one of those weeks.
Well, I would bet that the channels on which the Gospel of Judas was advertised are probably not the channels that your age group was probably tuning into most of the time.
Depends on whether you're talking about honor students or not, Dad.
Well, even, honor students or not, I'm still, unless you're watching a lot of National Geographic Channel or History Channel or Fox News, you probably didn't see too much of that. Just my guess.
Never know. I know a lot of friends who sit around and they watch History Channel or just stuff.
Mm-hmm. We do here, mm-hmm. But it seemed that this past week there were an awful lot of programs on there designed on the History Channel and National Geographic Channel that were designed to debunk historic Christianity.
Well, strangely enough, I was told by one of my friends, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I was told this was anti-Christianity week.
It kind of seemed that way.
Almost a national, like an actual thing that someone started.
Well,
and this wasn't a kid who didn't believe either. This was Andy Kelly who told me this.
Okay, and we know the Kellys are, are regular churchgoers. In fact, his father is the is an elder at a local non-denominational church, a church that we respect, very biblically sound. There is a fellow by the name of Brian Fleming who has produced a movie called The God Who Wasn't There. We talked about this earlier this week. Put out a press release early in the week announcing a war on Easter. Of course, he did the same thing back in December where he announced a war on Christmas. And his war is to get volunteers around the country to take 666 copies of this DVD and hide them in churches so that they would be found by children this weekend. And they are wrapped in a wrapper that says The God Movie. Yeah, but instead of a movie about God, it's about how Jesus never existed.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He was interviewed by a program like this one, produced at the University of Georgia. A couple of young men there do an interesting program on the supernatural and the paranormal, which was rather ironic because they seemed to agree with Brian Fleming that Jesus never existed. In listening to their interview, his basic contention is that you can't believe what you read in the New Testament because it's too incredible to believe.
But,
and yet then you look at, I won't go off too far in that direction.
But our puny human minds can't wrap our brains around that.
Well, it discounts the eyewitness testimony of the people who were there. It discounts the written record and so forth, and does so with the basic presumption that the supernatural doesn't exist, you know, because you can't measure it.
This guy is from Missouri, and show me.
No, it's afraid not. He was raised in a very conservative evangelical Christian home, apparently. And it strikes me that he had a bad experience at some point with religion.
Probably.
And so
it's just funny, that sort of thing. To me, that's just like. Have you ever tried to sit and think about what's beyond the universe? Where are the edges of the universe? Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind can't comprehend it. I love thinking of questions like that because my mind can't comprehend.
Well,
you know, it's that sort of thing. You can't comprehend a miracle, you know.
And that's, you're right. That's sort of the definition of a miracle. It's something that's not supposed to be possible. And people who claim that they know for a fact that God doesn't exist are in effect saying that they know everything, because the only way you can prove a negative, like God doesn't exist, is to be omniscient.
Exactly.
Yeah, but of course, if you're omniscient, then you, by definition, are God, which proves you wrong.
So I love logic.
Makes no sense. So anyway, he launched his attack on Christianity this week by trying to mount a preemptive strike on Easter with his 666 DVDs.
How polite of him.
Well, you know, this is the sound of me turning the other cheek.
Swish.
So, and again, the mainstream media isn't going to be real sympathetic to historic Christianity. And by that I mean people who actually take the Bible as a historic record of what happened. But Christians should not get themselves all up in arms about it, because Jesus warned us 2,000 years ago that this is what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And that if we expected to be treated better than he got, then we had to kind of step back and reevaluate our relationship to him, you know.
Yeah.
One of the programs on the network that's been really offensive to, well, just about everybody is South Park.
Well, yeah.
Is that something that you and your friends watch?
I don't. We stopped.
Years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago, when it really got crude. And I know some friends watch it, but...
Yeah, well, we quit the first season.
Yeah, it was first season.
Yeah.
I didn't even see the whole first season.
Well, because we watched the shows before we decided which ones we would let you watch, and many of them we didn't let you watch. And, you know, I know that we're telling stories on ourselves here, but...
Well, I mean, we're just admitting that we did it.
Another example of a tragic case in the culture where somebody who's really, really talented and could be very, very funny, without getting crude for the sake of being crude, decides to go ahead and be crude anyway.
Like that Dane Cook guy I was telling you about earlier.
Right, a comedian that Nicole was sharing some stories about. South Park, the guys behind it, Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Right.
were in the news a little while ago because Isaac Hayes, who's been voicing the character Chef for years, quit when they decided to do an episode that was critical of Scientology.
Yeah.
Now, South Park has made fun of just about every other religion during its run, and Mr. Hayes didn't have any problem with that. But when it came to poking fun at what he believes, of course, he took issue. Well, the guys behind South Park apparently used their most recent episode to make fun of Comedy Central, which is the network that broadcasts South Park, because the network refused to let them use an image of the Prophet Muhammad. Now, in the Islamic faith, images of Muhammad are forbidden. That's considered a sacrilege.
Well, because there aren't that many of them.
No, it's just considered a sacrilege. You just do not depict Muhammad. You don't depict Allah. You've never seen an image of Allah.
I mean, there's only one or two images of Muhammad himself out there.
Well, there may be more than that, but it's not allowed in the Islamic faith is the point.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, because we learned about that in history and because he didn't want himself to be depicted because they didn't want to remember him. He didn't want them to remember him as, the picture he wanted them to remember
because it's
him
idolatry.
For what he did. Yeah, that was exactly what it was.
In fact,
commendable, I guess.
Yeah, the big flap over the cartoons that were run in the Danish newspaper.
Yeah.
Were not only the fact that Muhammad was being criticized, but that Muhammad was being depicted at all.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there are, a bunch of other issues about why those riots got out of hand. Those flames were fanned after gasoline had been poured on,
worms right there.
In the aftermath of that, Comedy Central decided not to allow South Park's creators to use the picture of Muhammad.
Yeah.
They didn't want to stir up any trouble. So instead, Wednesday's episode showed an image of Jesus Christ defecating on President George Bush and the flag of the United States of America. Now, Trey Parker and Matt Stone complained about South Park, or about Comedy Central, not because they didn't complain about, showing Jesus Christ defecating on the president of the U.S. They complained because they were prevented from, depicting Muhammad doing something equally gross, probably, or obscene.
Yeah.
As a Christian, what do you say? Again, it's the kind of thing that Jesus warned us to expect.
Yeah.
And again, I say, just listen as we turn our cheeks.
Swish.
There's nothing else you can do about it. I know that there will be those among us who profess to be Christians who will get really angry and express themselves in very angry terms about this. But it's not going to change anything. If anything, it will show non-believers that Christians are indeed an angry and spiteful group. It's not the kind of thing that should surprise us because it's been going on since the time of Jesus Christ. The message he brought into the world got him nailed up on the cross, and those of us who profess to follow it shouldn't expect treatment any better. And yelling and screaming and demanding change, isn't going to make things any different.
No.
One of the things I wanted to talk about for just a minute, if you don't mind. Got an email this week from somebody who raised some questions about why I wrote a sci-fi fantasy novel.
Really?
Yeah. Iron Dragons is officially published this week.
Yeah.
And
my friends have been waiting for that.
Well, you can let them know. They can have their very own copy.
Hooray.
But I don't want to get into blatant self-promotion here. I just want to explain a little bit why I, a professing Christian, wrote a book that is not overtly Christian.
Yeah. Well, that's just the point, isn't it? You're trying to get it. It's sneaky like that.
Well, I don't know if sneaky is the word I would choose to use.
Well, you find a better one.
Well,
yeah.
I started out writing it as a secular novel, and I found out as I wrote it, even though it's set in a fictional world, that I was not going to be able to write a story that didn't include some discussion of faith. And that if I was going to discuss faith, you know, or have the characters get involved in discussions of faith, that I was not going to be able to create a fantasy god. So the god that is presented in this, in Iron Dragons, is like the monotheistic god of our Jewish brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. I did not present a Christ figure in the novel. But the theme of sacrifice for one's fellow men and women, mm-hmm. Is very much a part of the story.
Yeah.
One of the principal characters is a young priest who basically decides he's going along on the adventure, regardless of what the protagonist thinks. And by the end of the novel, the protagonist has to question some things that he believes about the world. Mm-hmm. And questions of faith and the ways in which God chooses to influence things in our lives,
yeah.
are raised.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, God works in our lives in ways that we don't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And we attribute to timing or chance or hard work. Or luck, even?
I'm going through, you know, something that wouldn't make a lot of people probably question right now. I mean, kids my age.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a boyfriend for, you know, about a year and 2 months, which is a long time.
For someone your age? Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I don't think about, you know, I think, well, you know, it happened because there was a reason it happened. I don't think, oh, well, I must, you know, there's chance or bad timing or something. I don't think mm-hmm. about that. And, you know, it showed me a lot about his character because he thought it wasn't fair to me the way that just not being able to, you know, that he couldn't show the same affection. He thought it wasn't fair. So, you know, it was more for my sake than it was for his own.
You mean the decision to...
Decision to break up. But the thing is, we're going to be friends. So, you know, there's a reason. And I think one of the reasons is to gain a really great friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or whatever. But, I mean, there's a reason there. And I might not know what it is right now, but I will eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So
seeing that God is working in even what most people would consider just a kind of routine part or regular part of just living your life as a as a high school student.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. There's an old joke about a pastor who's a victim of a flood.
Right.
And the waters are rising, and as the situation is growing more and more dangerous, the police come by and offer him a ride, and he says, "No, thank you, brothers, but God will take care of me." And the water continues to rise, and eventually he manages to find safety on the roof of his home. And somebody comes by in a canoe and offers him a space in the canoe. It's like, "Come on, let's get out of here. The waters are continuing to rise." And the pastor says, "No, thank you, brother. God will provide for me." And the water continues to rise, and now he's climbing up the brick chimney, and he's hanging onto the top of the chimney, and a helicopter comes by, and the police and the bullhorn, you know, shout down a message, "Grab on to the ladder and let us take you to safety. No, thank you, brothers. God will provide. God will take care of me." And the waters continue to rise and eventually overwhelm the pastor, and he drowns. And as he finds himself in heaven, he is overwhelmed by curiosity, and he finds he just must ask the Lord, "God, why didn't you save me?" And he hears the answer, "I sent the police, the Coast Guard, and a rescue helicopter. What more did you want?" So the point is, that even though in the novel Iron Dragons, you don't see a legion of angels riding to the aid of the protagonist in his hour of need, even though you don't see overt intervention, the issues of faith are there. They are raised, and at the end of the novel, raised very directly by one of the other characters, who basically says, if you don't think that all of these things happen for a reason, then, well, essentially, you're an idiot. And yeah. The protagonist is left at the end of the novel having to question, you know, okay, I've got to go think for a while about, you know, what it is I believe, because everything that I thought, you know, I had a grip on is just not making sense to me right now. And that's hopefully what I can convey with the novel. It's not overtly Christian, but the goal is to get it into hands of young adults in particular who yeah. would not read an overtly Christian novel.
Mm-hmm. Like my friends, well, who have been interested since you read that first chapter, first two chapters or whatever, in seventh grade
yeah.
to my class.
Well, and I hope that some of them will take advantage of mm-hmm. this. I respect the opinions of our brothers and sisters in Christ who think that it would have been better had I written a novel that is overtly Christian and preaches the gospel plainly.
Well, quite frankly, you could do that some other time. I mean,
well, and I hope that given the opportunity, you know, we will do that. But, mm-hmm. You know, with all due respect, there are quite a few extremely talented, much better writers than I that mm-hmm. are writing in that genre already. Mm-hmm. I really feel, you know, strongly, and I have for a long time, Nicole, since I looked at you in the eyes when you were little and said, boy, I better figure out what it is I believe so I can
yeah.
share that with you, that there needs to be a much better effort on the part of Christians, Christian parents, mm-hmm. in teaching their children what they believe. But that begins with, you know, understanding what it is that we believe. So hopefully this will get into a hand or two and at least get some young adults thinking about these bigger picture issues. Because yeah. I can speak from experience that it wasn't until I got into my mid-30s that I really started thinking about them. And I really wish that when I was your age, Nicole, I had been thinking about things like this then.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why Iron Dragons is not overtly Christian.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you and your family a blessed Resurrection Sunday and hope that you have a time to just reflect on the sacrifice that was made and on the really unbelievable concept that the creator of the universe would so care about, you know, us, as insignificant as we are in the grand scheme of things, that he would subject himself to the torture and the death that he did. It's really kind of an amazing thought when you sit and contemplate.
Mm-hmm.
So we wish you a blessed weekend. Look forward to Monday. And through the weekend, of course, we've got that homework assignment of checking out that comet and what the real risk is of a massive comet striking the Earth on May 25th.
How the heck do you pronounce its name?
Yeah. Watchman, Schleichman.
Susan?
That's it.
Susan?
We thank you for listening.
Not even trying.
We thank you for listening. And Nicole, thank you for sitting in for Sharon for the last few minutes.
Yeah. Well, I'm standing.
And Sharon for standing in right next to Nicole right there. Yeah, until Monday, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert.
And I'm not Sharon Gilbert, I'm Nicole.
Thanks for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye, everybody. Gonna step up to the microphone.